to the Pensacola Expert Panel. I'm Jenna Barr. It's Tuesday morning, a sunshiny start to our day. More sunshine on the way. So excited because it's Garden Line Day. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, Jenna. Good morning to you on a Tuesday that feels like Monday.
It is a little Monday-ish.
It feels like Monday.
We will make it through. Because you know what? It's a good day to take a walk in the garden. This is a perfect morning.
It is a great morning. It really was. Yesterday was so nice. It really was. But you know, it's so funny. Over, you know, everybody was looking forward to the weekend and that Saturday was going to be perfect too, but didn't turn out that way. But Sunday did pretty good. Sunday and Monday did pretty good.
Yeah. I would guess a little showers that we needed.
Yes. Yes. And still need some more.
Yes.
Exactly.
I don't complain about rain now. I used to when I lived up north because sun, you know, was just special in the summertime. Right. We wanted it to be hot. Then I moved here and now I'm like, I'm good with the rain. If you would like it to rain at least twice a week, I'm okay with that.
That's the old Carpenter song.
That's right.
Rainy days and Monday mornings.
Exactly.
Always make me sad. You know, talking about rain, we do need to talk about a rain event. Does the name Agatha resonate with you?
Agatha. Didn't she write like mysteries?
No, that's Agatha somebody. That's
Christie.
Another. That's another Agatha. You know, no. Agatha was the hurricane in the Pacific that is crossing into Mexico, and of course, being in the Pacific, it has a propensity to come through the Mexico and then get into the Gulf. Mm-hmm. Well, Agatha, I think it was a Category 2 by the time it strengthened, but it's going to dissipate over the mountains of Mexico. But that's the good news. The bad news is that there's a chance that the remnants of Agatha could enter the southeastern Gulf and form another storm, which would be called Alex. Not Agatha.
Agatha becomes Alex.
Agatha becomes Alex.
I don't know. This
Agatha
is a little too 2022 for me.
Exactly. Okay. So I guess I just need to spend just a couple of seconds here.
Well, tomorrow is gardeners, June 1st.
Exactly. As gardeners, what do we do? Well, how do we plan? What do we do? One, we've got to, if you have time, and you can reach them without getting on a ladder, is trim some of these dead branches off our trees that are just hanging there that could become projectiles, if you will, in a very, very strong wind. And then we need to do the basics we always do for hurricanes. We know how to do it here in Pensacola. We need to plan. We need to get our generator out of the garage and test it out and get us a couple of 5-gallon cans of gas. Be sure we have an extra propane tank for our gas grill. If you don't have a gas grill, get a few more bags of charcoal. And be sure to have a plan insofar as what to do with your patio furniture, your hanging plants. And going back to the tree trimming, it's really interesting. Some people, if they have a new tree, say you've got a new 6-foot crepe myrtle, if you're going to have a strong wind, should you put a stake on it to stake it up to secure it or not? Well, historically, people said do it. The new discussion is you don't need to do it. Let the tree kind of fend for itself, especially if it's has come out of a container or is it what we call a ball and burlap root system to it. So it's got a heavy base to it. That tree will do better long term if you don't stake it. And if it's a new young tree and we have a strong wind that kind of leans it over, you can reset it. But sometimes when they're staked, all the new thinking is that the top of it will kind of snap off. A little bit like during Ivan and Sally and all of those, the river birch in Pensacola, which is one of my favorite trees. A lot of people have the multi-trunk river birch with the peely red bark. It's really a cool tree. But in a strong wind, that top will snap. And during Ivan, a lot of that happened insofar as the river birch are concerned. So, but in any event, insofar as staking trees, if you have a new young tree, you may want to listen to some of the new experts and not stake it. So that's some of the things we need to do to get ready for the storm that may come. Now, will Alex come here? There's no indication I can see that that's the case. But it's a good wake-up call for us to, as gardeners, to look outside and decide what we need to do to get ready if, in fact, one crops up. And sometimes it can happen quickly in the Gulf and not give us too much warning. So be ready. But one other thing, I will say this, last thing, about trimming those trees. If you're of my generation, don't get on that ladder. Just don't do it. Get a teenager or get a group tree service to come do that trimming for you. It isn't worth it, I'll tell you right now. You've got to be so careful. You really do.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's my
safety
hurricane
first.
Spiel for the day.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's time to start after last week, those storms that rolled through last week. Wednesday is specifically, early Wednesday morning, we kind of got a little bit of a taste and
a
reminder.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you get a storm like that and you get 30, 40 mile an hour winds. Don't forget Ivan with 100 plus winds. What the damage they can, well, we all know the damage they can do. I always send people, and Jenna, maybe I've mentioned this to you before, after Hurricane Ivan, the Pensacola News Journal published a book called Ivan's Wake. It's a hardcover book that had nothing but pictures of the damage done by Ivan. Mm. I don't know if it's still available or not, but I think I've told you before, my grandchildren, when they come over to the house, will get that book out and look at it and say, did this really happen in Pensacola? Well, yes, it did. And there are a lot of people that know that and, you know, may still have some effects from it. But Ivan's Wake, interesting book. They probably have
goodness.
It at the library for sure.
Well, yeah, I guess you should go there. Or you can get it on Amazon for just $135.
No. It's not that big a book.
I'm not joking.
No, you're kidding. No.
If you want me to prove it, I will copy and paste.
No. You don't need to prove it.
Let me just tell you something.
But it's
this
not.
This book better blow my socks off.
$100?
$135. There's 19 used.
For Ivan's.
You can get like a three. They only have three new. The cheapest new one is $131.
I'll sell mine for $125 tomorrow.
What are we doing over here, Mike? Let's go make some money.
Exactly. That's wow. Exactly.
Wow.
Oh my goodness. Hey, I had no idea, but it's a book that really tells
a very alarming.
It tells a sad tale.
What
happened to us during Ivan.
Just the cover photo alone of the horrific story of the truck.
The truck hanging off the bridge.
Absolutely. Is a reminder. Do not take hurricane season lightly. We have a lot of individuals who have moved here. If you have neighbors who have moved here from out of state who are not used to hurricanes, talk to them. It is very important that we are there for each other as a community, not to just take care of our yards, but each other most of all. It's 9:14. If you'd like to text in a question, 850-437-1620. We do have to take a quick break. When we come back, our friend Tracy, he wants to know, Mike, what should I do with a tomato plant that is now almost 6 feet tall and has yet to produce a bit of its fruit? Every time it gets a few flowers, I'll give it a little shake to try and help it along, but it's still not producing anything. So we're going to think about that question, answer it when we come back, and then looks like our phone lines are lighting up. You're listening to The Garden Line on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, getting ready. Tomorrow is June 1st, kicking off hurricane season, and we do have our tips that will be added to the website later. You can go to newsradio923.com, look for the Garden Line podcast. You are listening to the Garden Line, 850-437-1620. I'm Jenna Barr, and Mike is here to answer your questions. Before we go ahead and get to Carol from Lillian, Alabama, I want to go ahead.
Thank you.
I know, I'm excited.
That's cool.
We're branching out.
Yes.
I would like to talk about Tracy's tomatoes.
Why they're not producing.
Yeah, he's got a problem here.
Yeah, just a couple of reasons. And one is insects. That's possible. I have a cherry tomato in a container that is just looking gorgeous until the weekend when the worms got to it.
Ooh.
And that could be part of the reason. However, I think sometimes with all the rain we had, the quick rain kind of gives you a not a consistent watering pattern. Let's put it that way. And I think a lot of plants don't like that. Sometimes if you're fertilizing tomato plants or any plant that blooms and you're inconsistent with that, or you fertilize it a little too much, can cause blossom drop. And that's what you may be dealing with here. If it's a tall one, obviously be sure it's staked. Water it consistently. You may want to back off the fertilizer if you're doing any fertilizing with it now. And the rest, I think, is up to Mother Nature. I think that's where you got to go.
Okay, excellent. Hey, Tracy, keep us up to date on your tomatoes. We love to see pictures, too, so let us know how it goes. We do have Carol on the line from Lillian. Good morning, Carol. What's your question for Mike?
Hey, good morning. My question is, I have got three citrus fruit trees, and lime, lemon, and an orange or tangerine, and they're all currently in containers. The lime and lemon I've had the longest, and I transferred them probably about a year and a half ago to a larger container. But the couple of questions here. My lime is just blooming and has all these lovely little white blooms. My lemon kind of went through this leaf drop thing over the winter, and it's slowly recovering, but it doesn't have near the foliage as the other tree. And I'm wondering, first of all, when and if I should transplant them to larger containers. And I have started fertilizing a little bit, just like every 6 to 8 weeks. But I didn't know exactly about fertilizing them and such as that. I don't have them out in the wintertime. I bring them in the wintertime. I don't know if that might have something to do with the leaf drop I experienced. But
well, exactly, Carol, I totally agree with your analysis of that. Sometimes when you move a plant, I've seen people sometimes move a plant maybe 6 feet where it went from, say, full sun to semi-shade to kind of total shade if you have to put those citrus trees in the garage, for example, and then you put it back out. Yes, you can get a type of plant shock and you'll drop some leaves. Generally, it will recover from that, like I think yours are doing. Obviously, a little citrus fertilizer would be in order, which I bet you've done in the past, and I think that's fine. Now, obviously, the question about should you bump them up to a bigger pot, it just kind of depends if they're getting root-bound or not. If they're in, say, a 16-inch pot and they're 6 feet tall, yes, go ahead to do a bigger pot. But if you do that, I would prefer you to do that transplanting in the cooler months of the year. You do it, you start transplanting those plants in the intense heat, I think sometimes you can have some more plant shock issues. So I would prefer you to do your bumping up, if you will, to the bigger pot in the cooler months of the year. Maybe even in the winter when you've got them in the garage or whatever, then move them up then. But for now, I don't think I would do it now unless they are just really, really root-bound and it's just mandatory to do it. Otherwise, I'd wait just a little bit. But a little citrus fertilizer, have them in the full sun. You know, sometimes not you, Carol, but a lot of us kid ourselves, say, oh, it gets mostly sun, but it needs full sun. And that's kind of like growing lawn grass, you know. Say, oh, I've got St. Augustine, it's got, 60% shade. Why doesn't it grow? Well, that's because it doesn't have 40%, the other 40%. So, right. I would just be sure you're in full sun. Of course, over in Lillian, Alabama, you can grow anything. It's that's a wonderful spot to garden. It really. Oh yes.
Oh, that's great. That's good news for Lillian.
Well, you know, for citrus, you know, you've got Orange Beach. And Carol, help me here. Did they used to grow oranges over there? Did they not?
Oh, okay. As far as I know, I'm a transplantee, so I don't know much history.
Just believe whatever we say is good. Yeah. Whatever we say is true.
Exactly. Let's just make that true. But Carol, good luck with your citrus. That's a fun thing to grow. And last year, most of our citrus growers here over in Northwest Florida were very successful. Very successful. Yeah. And so I bet you will be too.
Okay, one quick question, though. If we end up moving back to Tennessee, is it forget about carrying those with me, or
Well, unless you, I think you've got a real chore up in Tennessee, with just the cold weather. You're going to really have to protect them so much of the year.
Yeah,
it's probably not the plant of choice up there. But you know, if they're pretty and they're producing, and you've got room in the moving van, take them and see what happens. It might be fun to try.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks so much, y'all. I really enjoy your program.
Oh, Carol, thanks for calling us.
Yes, Carol, thank you so much. Keep us posted. Love hearing those stories and love getting those updates. Hey, you know this seagrass, the seaweed that's been washing up on the beaches?
So sargassum.
Sargassum.
Yes. Right.
It's just that name is just as awful as that crunchy, stinky grass underneath our toes. Do you think that would make a good lawn fertilizer?
No. No.
You don't want some stinky, fishy
probably not.
Grass?
No, I don't think that would be the thing to use. I think we need to stick to our traditional fertilizers. Now, no. Good idea.
We like thinking outside the box, and that was not my idea. I cannot take any credit for that. That is our wonderful listener who texted that in, and if you're pulling my leg, you did it. You pulled it.
Did they do it? Have you done it?
If you're going to ask, you should try.
Yeah, have they done it? Yeah, let me put it to you this way. If you're going to take some of that sargassum weed and put it on your lawn, do a small little bitty section. Experimental section. Don't put it over your whole
acre. Do you live near the beach?
Acre.
How come your house in 9 miles smells like you live next to the beach? Oh, it's just my new fertilizer. I love it. Try it out. I would love to smell your car after you transport that. It's 9:25. You're listening to The Garden Line on News Radio 92.3. Text in your questions this morning, 850-437-1620. We were talking about getting I think now, Mike, that you explained it, Ivan's Wake. I'm looking at the book.
Yes.
And this is a coffee table book here.
Yes, it is. Yes.
And I do really like it. We have the best listeners, and they gift me the most beautiful gifts. I actually have a coffee table book. It sits out all the time, and it's all about the history of Pensacola. This is definitely a coffee table book, and there's hardcovers, though, you can get used for $5 on.
There you go.
Amazon.
So, or I would say the public library has one also.
Yeah.
Probably has a bunch. But anyway, quite frankly, many of us don't necessarily want to reminisce about Hurricane Ivan, but it's fascinating to see what those storms can do. And what that does, it just makes us realize the preparations we need to take in order to be ready for these things. I mean, we live here in Northwest Florida, we love it. But we need to be ready for that.
Absolutely. And of course, it's about 9:29. So I want to go back through, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Garden Line on News Radio 92.3. This is your Pensacola expert panel. I'm Jenna Barr, and Mike Wiggins is here every Tuesday morning to answer your questions. But we do want to remind you, this is the time. Hire somebody, get that teenager, it is summer, they're out of school, to trim those dead branches
Absolutely.
And limbs
Yes.
that are hanging over your house or in your yard, fences, things like that. Reduces the amount of damage.
No question about it. And
step one.
I think I've told you I've got a live oak in my front yard. Big one.
You and love the leaves.
I got the leaves. Oh man! And they've stopped falling. By the way, that's good.
Okay.
But I've got a tree surgeon that every 2 years I do it. He kind of opens it up, so it's not so thick that it acts like the sail on a sailboat when you get 100-mile-an-hour winds, which will just topple them over. The wind will, in some instances, in some ways, goes through the tree and hopefully reduces any potential damage that we may have. So not a bad thing to do.
Okay, perfect. Excellent. Mike, thank you so much. If you'd like to text in your question this morning to News Radio 92.3, text it into our number 850-437-1620. I'm Jenna Barr. We'll be right back. Going to take a break. Candy Cullerton is in the newsroom with your headlines.
Hepatitis A linked to organic strawberries. We'll tell you more about that coming up.
850-437-1620. Thanks for joining us here on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Got a question about, looks like spraying insects in the vegetable garden and on potted plants. So got a little insect problem with one of our listeners.
Very good. By the way, great Diana Ross impression.
Yeah, you like that back here? I don't even know what that was. I was trying to eat the rest of my breakfast. I am not, and I'm also doing my dancing at the same time.
There you go, there you go.
Plus exercising. I feel like you should exercise with that song.
I agree.
My sweatband on and my leg warmers.
Back to the 60s.
Woo!
Okay, insects in the garden. I'm going to get personal here for a minute. I have that tomato plant that I discovered over the weekend. The leaves have just had, it's kind of been stripped. Now it looks lacy because of what the worms have done. If you have a tomato plant and you have that type of problem and you have worms doing it, and only worms, Bacillus thuringiensis. We've talked about that on the air before. Abbreviation, BT. Go to your garden center, tell them if they've got some BT. I think you can get it liquid, but I think most people use a dust and just kind of dust your plants with that. Another kind of all-purpose insecticide for a vegetable garden is very, very old-fashioned. It's called 5% 7 dust. 7 is S-E-V-E-N, 7 dust. And it's good. You can buy it 5%, 10%. I prefer the 5. It's not quite as strong and should do the job for what you're trying to do. And you can do that with a liquid also. But once again, I think most people use a dust. We used to sell it in 5-pound bags, 5% 7 dust. And it's labeled for vegetables. Now, you know what we always say here on the Garden Line. If you're buying a bag of a product that says this is for vegetables, that's great. But read the fine print to be sure it says the name of the vegetable on which you're going to put it, because you don't want to put it on a vegetable that's not labeled. That's just very, very important. But those are two products, that BT, Bacillus thuringiensis, and the 5% 7, that is pretty good for vegetables. But anything you use, be sure it's labeled for vegetables and labeled for the vegetables that you're growing. Very important.
Okay, check the labels. Read the labels.
Check the labels, always.
Double check them. Okay, excellent. Got another question here and letting it load. Mike.
Yes.
Here we go.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
This sounds really serious.
We need to take a deep breath.
Okay.
So my irrigation water smells like rotten eggs. I know that smell. It smells like a fart. I know what it is, but I don't know what it is. It smells like sulfur, right? Is this bad for new sod? What is it? It's new to me. It's a new to me home with an old well pump that I was able to refurbish. I've also replaced the sprinkler heads and positioned to not hit the brick, as I've heard well water has a tendency to stain.
What I would do immediately is get in touch with the County Extension Service, be it Santa Rosa County or Escambia
yes.
County, and find out how you can get that water tested to see what okay. it is, to be sure that it is safe for turf. If it's an old well, who knows what could be in that water. I was going to say, if it's water like ECUA water, you should be fine, but you would call them. But if it's an old well water or old well, I certainly would not move forward without getting that water tested. And the extension agents can tell you who and where that can be done. So that's the path I would follow.
Okay, just sent the number. You can go ahead and give them a call. They'll walk you through everything. Thank
exactly.
you for that.
All
right,
absolutely.
It's 9:41, so if you have another question, you can text it in, or feel free to call 850-437-1620.
Very good. Jenna, I have got, we talked about this, I think, one time before. The guy over in Calhoun County, Daniel Leonard, who is a county extension agent, sent me this list of some new plants, some of them are new species, and you have to ask the question, why do we need them? We've got some plants that do very well here, but a lot of our plants, not a lot, but some of our plants have some problems, and the new plants need to be improved plants. Plus, you've got changes in consumer preference. what people want as far as, do they want more compact plants? Do they want more flowers? Do they want a variegated look? Do they want an interesting foliage and that type of thing? Well, there are some new plants out there. If you go to a garden center, you'll see some of the things that you just don't recognize. So, I mean, I do that. I don't know what these things are sometimes. But if you buy a plant, talk to the folks there to be sure it's adapted to Northwest Florida. And be careful. Be careful of some of those new plants you buy. And I would recommend, until you just load up, if you see a plant in a garden center, you really don't know what it is. You don't have a history of it. And even the people there may not know. Just don't buy a truckload of it. But here's one of the new ones that I think is really important. And I hope I'm not repeating myself, but this is important. Indian hawthorn, Raphiolyptus, is one of our most used plants in Northwest Florida. Not anymore, because it's got that entomosporium leaf spot, similar to a photinia leaf spot that got on red top, and that's why there are no more red top in Northwest Florida. Anyway, this one is called Clean Sweep Snowbank, and one is called Clean Sweep Spring Sonata Indian Hawthorn. It has white flowered, white flowers. It's a dwarf plant, kind of dwarf mounding plant. It is resistant to that leaf spot, and it grows a little bit larger than your regular Raphiolyptus, and it's very low maintenance. But this is a brand new one on the market. Now, is it available in Pensacola? Don't know. You may want to ask. Clean Sweep Snowbank and Clean Sweep Spring Sonata Indian Hawthorn. Anyway, it looks great. That is a beautiful plant. It's just a staple in our landscaping until it got that leaf spot all over town. Now, here's one, gentlemen. Another one. This is called Clarity Blue Flax Lily. It's a blue-leaved clumping ground cover. Now, we have flax lily used all over Pensacola in commercial landscapes, residential landscapes. They're everywhere, and they're great because they're a variegated look. No blooms to speak of. It sends out a little nondescript bloom, but that's no big deal. But it's you plant it because of the variegation. But this one has a leaf that is blue. It doesn't look like a bright blue, but it has a blue tinge to it. Full sun, drought tolerant, great in sandy soil, no pest or disease issues. And it has very low fertility and irrigation needs, just as the flax lily that we plant now. But it's got that dark color. It's not variegated. It's a dark blue. Interesting. I'm not sure where one would use that. So a blue flax lily, but it might be fun to grow. That's the new variety. Ask for that. Clarity Blue Flax Lily. Okay. Now, talking about something that's blue, how about a crepe myrtle that has black foliage? Once again, I don't know if I would want that one, but it's called Sunset Magic Crepe Myrtle, because all the literature says that people, I guess all over the country, or in the South at least, have been looking for a good black foliaged, red flowering crepe myrtle. So that's what this is. It's has less disease, and they've obviously, if you do some reading on this, they've tried before to develop a crepe myrtle with black foliage. But in any event, this is the Sunset Magic Crepe Myrtle. And it looks kind of like a dwarf one, small, or maybe 10 feet tall. It's about as tall as it's going to get, maybe 8 feet wide. So interesting plant. And as I said early on, some of these new plants are interesting. They're really interesting to read about and maybe interesting to look at, maybe in somebody else's yard first.
Test it out on somebody else first.
Yeah, be sure they work. That's the whole thing, because it's like some plants have come out and some turf has come out over the years, and it's the miracle. It's a miracle grass. It's a miracle plant. It's going to change the way we landscape. And
we love miracles.
And that miracle didn't always turn out. So,
Well, there's something to test out. We're going to take another quick break, back, and got a couple phone calls coming in here on the Garden Line. You're listening to News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. We are hurrying along through the garden line this beautiful Tuesday morning. Happy Tuesday to you. I hope you're having a fantastic Tuesday-ish, Monday-ish Tuesday. Sarah from Pensacola is on the line. Sarah, what's your question for Mike?
Good morning, Jenna and Mike. I listen to you guys every week. Love the show.
Sarah, we love you. Thank you.
So I'm here with my son, Cole. He's a high school student at West Florida in the agri-science program. So he has a question about his plumeria. He has several of them, and they're blooming. And this particular one is dropping all of its flowers. They open up, and then they fall. They're beautiful. They smell great, but normally they'll stay on, you know, the plant for a while before they fall to the ground. But it's almost as if as soon as they open up, they're falling. Do you guys have any ideas of what could be going on?
Well, we kind of talked a little bit about that earlier. I think that's environmental, to be quite frank with you. I think we've had a lot of rain all at once. We've had the temperatures cool just a little bit and then come back up. So, and I think most plants, especially blooming plants, sometimes don't like that change that quick. It's like freezes. You know, when we go into the winter in Pensacola, we can be at 80 degrees and then get down into the 30s the next day. Well, those big changes plants don't like. And I'm going to say this is probably not a disease. It's probably not a bug that's doing it. And it could be, are they in the ground or are they in pots?
They're in pots.
Yeah. Well, be sure they're all of them are getting the same amount of sunlight and the same amount of water on a regular schedule.
Okay.
And I think that's about all I can offer because, you know, plants sometimes really, really do react odd to, you know, different environmental conditions over which none of us have control. So I would say to look at that. But as long as the rest of them are doing great, that's good. That's good. I think
awesome.
that's what I would do. Tell me about your plumeria. What do they look like? I mean, go ahead.
He's got yellow flowered, red flowers.
Oh, do you good.
Pink and orange.
Yeah, they are
white.
Beautiful. They are beautiful.
He's got several.
Yeah.
Man, they smell amazing.
Yeah. That's a plant a lot of people don't plant. And I think it's very interesting that y'all are doing that.
He keeps them in pots and brings them inside of our Florida room or the greenhouse like every winter to protect them because, you know, it's just so cold here.
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
I mean, he's rescued many of them, and they're doing so well. So whatever, something just was different this year. He's had them for, you know, many years.
Right.
It's just something different. So
let's blame it on the environment. I don't think it's anything y'all have done, that's for sure.
Hey, Sarah, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it so much. We have another call coming in this morning. Looks like Jack from Pensacola is on the line. Hey, Jack, what's your question?
Hey, y'all. Hey, Mike, go Noles.
Hey, go Noles. Yes, sir.
So my question is, I have Laura Petalums well-established, and last year and now this year, I've had several just slowly die, and I'm not sure what to do. I put some 888 fertilizer in the soil to think that would, you know, keep any of the other ones from dying, but any ideas of what I should be looking for or doing differently?
That's awfully hard to say because, quite frankly, Laura Petalum, I would never say bulletproof. That's probably the wrong way to put it. They are very hardy plants, and as you know, they kind of grow overnight. They're so fast growing. If you have one that's dying, and if the rest of yours are doing well, that's awfully hard to say. Be sure, number one, you know, we always say, be sure you didn't get any weed killer, you know, like weed and feed fertilizer or whatever underneath the tree. Be sure that the 888 you put on there was slow release and you didn't put too much. It may have just literally burned it. And if that's the case, generally it'll come right back after a good pruning. But that's a hard one to say. Sometimes if some plants...
Well, I didn't put the 888 till I noticed some decline.
Right,
I'm thinking, I need to do something here.
Well, I think that was smart. I think that was smart to give that a try. So It's awful hard one to say. Some plants, you know, will get a root fungus. It's like azaleas. You'll have an azalea that's beautiful. Say it's 5 feet tall, a big Formosa azalea, but 20% of it will die, just die. And generally that is because of a long-term root problem over which we have no control. You just have to prune it out and keep pruning it out until it disfigures the plant and then replace the plant. There's no easy solution to what you're saying. Yeah.
It seems like when one started and then the one next to it, you know, caught whatever it had.
Well, and
that had like three in a row, and they're all like 6 foot tall. And
right
now the third one has it.
Yeah, and what you're saying? What you're saying?
The only thing I can detect is it's like a stalk or the trunk of the bush. Looks like it has like a green tint to it on it.
Right. Two quick things. One, insofar as the problem jumping to another plant, that's very indicative of a root problem. That happens on those, like the azalea example I gave you. The second thing is, and I know this probably does not apply to you, if anybody has used a weed eater around the trunk of that plant and broken that first layer on that trunk, that will do it every time. I'm sure that hadn't happened with you, but jumping with that problem, jumping from one plant to the other, to me, kind of, one option there, or one thought would be a problem with the root system.
Hey, Jack, thank you so much for calling. We've got to cut this short and get to our break. We are running out of time here on the Garden Line. You want to squeeze in one last minute question, 850-437-1620.
I got you, babe. I got you, babe.
We got you, babe, and your tomatoes.
There
right,
you go.
Mike?
Oh, no question about it. Henry called in, said that he was having caterpillars on his tomatoes, just like I've got on mine.
Yep.
The key is inspect them every day. Go out, take a look at them, you know, and if it looks like those leaves, well, you all, it's very obvious. They will strip those leaves. They'll make that leaf on a tomato look like it's just lacy. So go look at them, and if so, use the old, what we call it, BT, Bacillus thuringiensis, and that should help you.
That should help, and keep us posted. Text in next week with your pictures and updates here on the Garden Line. Join us every Tuesday morning at 9. Mike, that was so fun.
It's always fun.
And only one text about a lizard, and I held back.
No armadillos, thank
no
goodness.
No armadillos.